It's not complicated. Call it creative. Call it art. Call it design. It's the Design Coach on Lake 96.1.
I wrote it all down, Nancy. I wrote it all down in my
There's a lot of words on a lot of pieces
of paper.
It's actually,
as my daughter would say, it's really not that deep. Anyway, good morning, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. Hey, great show last week. For those of you who didn't get a chance to listen, the everyday sommelier, Glenn Garlish, was here with us. He takes a very everyman approach to wine and food pairings. Take a listen on that at WLKG.com or Lake96.com, and then also on Spotify.
He makes it so it doesn't feel complicated or overwhelming.
Yeah, but
it's it is what it is.
And honestly, that is, you know, especially for the vault and our new venture, you know, making luxury lifestyle super attainable and approachable. It's totally on brand.
Right.
It's completely on brand. And listen, I want to dig into a topic that I did wake up at 2 a.m. to pen this. And I know you've got your hand to your forehead.
I'm glad you didn't call. Thank you for not calling.
Here's the thing that's happened to me that I was describing to my team this week that, and I don't know if you've ever felt this way, Nancy, but right now I am, and I think it's just because the model is continuing to refine itself every day. The model of the Design Coach, we have a service model in TDC, which is the Design Coach, which is a high-end luxury service model,
right?
Dedicated to design, build, design and decoration, and then lifestyle support after the build. And then, of course, our new venture. And if you haven't gone online to go take a look at the outside of the building, how we've painted it, how it's starting to come together, it's like really exciting. Called The Vault, which is, you know, sort of Secrets to Finer Living, which is kind of signifies our return to coaching and teaching and providing an experience for people at all levels to be able to access, you know, conversations about quality and finer living as it's defined by them. And I'm really excited about it, Nancy, but I got, you know, running as a common thread through all of this is something that I don't think I've ever really talked about this particular topic as in depth as I'm going to today.
Okay. Don't mind me. I'm just looking at the
and this
website.
Oh yeah, no, it's the well, if you go on the Instagram, you're gonna see, you know, a lot of the inside shots of the photos. We've got lots of stuff arriving to the vault, and I'm really excited, and the team is really excited for us to sort of begin to, you know, to look at opening up this fall finally, which is in partnership with Wolf Sub Zero Cove, and you know, we couldn't be more proud of them and the partnership with Bella Tile and Stone, and you know, a bunch of other partners. But I will say that the common thread for today's show is going to be one that I think a lot of people pay lip service to. I think a lot of people pay lip service to the concept of collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all kind of talk a good game, and we all want to believe that we're great collaborators. I think we all want to believe that we're open-minded and that we can approach it with a pure spirit and a level of intentionality where we're really trying to seek understanding. And I don't think that that's the case these days. I just absolutely do not. In fact, I think it's when people say it, it's wrapped in a whole bunch of other gobbledygook that sort of gaslights the entire situation and lets you believe and tells people that you're into that sort of thing. And then you realize that it's only, you know.
Oh, people talk a good game.
Wrapped up narcissism, right. And you know, in this, like, you know, it's almost like when people tell you they're easy to work with, like, run the other way. I'm so easy to work with. No, run.
You're
no, you're not. If you have to say it, you're trying to convince yourself. But
I mean, I say it to myself all the time.
I know.
But I know better.
No, but it's if you're demanding, you kind of know it. You're better off coming out and saying I'm demanding.
Whoa.
But I reward if you can meet the demand, and that's honest. Love that.
Demanding and having realistic expectations are two different things,
100%
and can
agree.
Be mislabeled as the other. So, you know, you don't have to. You're not demanding if you have expectations of a certain level of service quality, product quality.
Well, it's a good
all of that,
and it's a good segue to what we're talking about, because I after 27 plus years doing what I'm doing in service to clients and trying to deliver creative and design outcomes that, you know, are ones that are both memorable, meaningful, and lasting. I feel like I can speak with you know, a lot of confidence on this subject, because right now at The Design Coach, you know, all we do on a daily basis is we're one of the rare design firms that opens up a collaborative kind of environment in the creative space for our clients to what I call vision surf.
Huh.
Meaning they're surfing their vision, crashing into waves, getting back up on the board, and they're just sort of surfing ideas to figure out how to find their groove.
Right.
And it's amazing once you find that groove, and listen, it takes a special kind of creative lifeguard to watch your client vision surf and not drown in the weight of the vision, or right, be able to swim, get back up on the board and ride the wave again, right? And right. that can be taxing, it can be emotional, it can be tiring, it can be expensive, it can be all of those types of things. But we're at The Design Coach, it's really one of the things that sets us apart is that we don't predefine a vision within the illusion of collaboration and then say, these are your options, this is what we do, you hired me for this look,
right?
This is your home as it's interpreted by moi. Like, right. That's not what I do, right? What we do is we say, use your messed up words to try to get to your big idea. That's a very different starting point than maybe a lot of other interior design firms, and it's made us who we are. Well, if it's going to be something that we're going to really, really, I would say over the past 20 plus years, something that we've really been a proponent of with clients in our creative dynamic and in our projects, then it's really now something that the team inside internally needs to really take pretty seriously.
Right.
You know, that we can't just be in our culture, as we say, creative, concierge, and comprehensive, and have it not be collaborative, because the answer in all three of those things, creative, comprehensive, and right, and concierge, means something different to different people. So it's incumbent upon us to try to find what that definition looks like or what the calculus looks like for our clients.
But they all have the one thing in common.
Well,
collaboration.
You'd like to think. I mean, that's the difference between a good client and not a great client,
well, that's
right,
true.
Is their ability to effectively collaborate with you.
That's true.
And to be honest about it. I think what I'd like to do is, on this particular show, I'm going to break down the guiding principles of collaboration as I see it, right? So the Design Coach's 6 guiding principles to effective collaboration. Now, this is what woke me up at 2 a.m., you know, I don't know about you, but I was describing to the team that, like, if you can envision, okay, I'm gonna try to do theater of the mind here. Ready? Everybody get ready.
That's good, because it's radio. That's
good.
What we
that's
do.
Good. If you can envision puzzle pieces flashing from left and right, top to bottom, across your face, about 500 miles an hour, almost to the point where the puzzle pieces, you know, puzzle pieces are irregularly shaped with, you know, little ways to connect it.
Right.
If you can envision hundreds of those flashing up across your face, left and right, and then top to bottom, and they're just like, right? They're just like, they're, and then every now and again, they're going click, click, click,
right?
Click, 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 right? Like, what's happening to me right now is that the click, like, and it's clicking. It's such a high processing rate that I was describing that. First of all, I think it can only be divine. I have to be honest about that. I feel like that's just a God-given ability, that when you have these epiphanies and aha moments, that I really believe there's something healthy going on inside of your mind that I only can describe as just an unbelievably beautiful and divine.
Right.
Whatever you decide to believe in, I just believe that it's bigger than me and it's just sort of happening, right? I don't think that it's just circumstance, because I've never been working harder. It's not like a lot has changed in the dynamic of my life, other than the fact that I feel like I have a clearer understanding. And I feel like that comes with age, right?
Right.
So maybe that's it. Maybe it's age, okay? Maybe it's a combination of all those things, but I'm gonna give it some, at least a divine nudge, okay, if you will. But I will say that as these things begin to click, what I'm noticing very quickly is the energy that it's giving me. Like, it's almost like when an idea, and I think everyone's experienced this, when an idea becomes so clear and you understand that it's actually achievable, you get that lift in spirit and in energy, mm-hmm. and in most of all, awareness, where you're just hyper aware of the puzzle pieces that fit and the ones that don't, and the ones that are a little loose that need to get maybe a little tightened up.
Right.
You're just hyper aware of all of the connectivity within the fabric of your vision and where the threads are, you know, strong, loose, frayed, whatever. Can I pile on more analogies in one segment? Or
I don't know.
I don't know. Should I? You know?
Yes, I believe you can.
I know.
I really do.
And I may try, but I will. I digress. But I will say this: I will say that it's energizing, and I don't think I've felt this level of lift internally from clarity in a really long time, and I feel like it feels really, really like amazing. But rather than have it just be sort of like this driving force, I think I'm old enough where I'm actually appreciating it, like absorbing it.
Right.
And like just sitting with it. Like I'm just sitting with the speed of the puzzle pieces moving and I'm not like in a rush to connect them. I'm letting them connect themselves. And I'm
right.
doing that. I'm doing that through more and more and more collaboration in my life. We're going to start with a premise, and I don't know how much time we have in this segment, but we're going to keep going here. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to set the stage before I get into the guiding principles. Okay, let's just say that I have said this before, and I think you might have remembered me saying this, that you know, life is one big piece of performance art. Okay,
right.
Everything you do, and everything you touch, and everything you produce, or sometimes what you don't produce has an effect in some way, okay? The things you say, the things you don't say, the things you write, the things you don't write down, right? The way you make people feel, the way people make you feel. Like everything is, and we'll start with the premise that everything is an interconnected creative ecosystem.
True.
Okay? If you can buy into that premise that you're not an island, okay, amongst, you know, you're not living in the world in isolation.
Right.
Okay. At least I really hope you're not.
It's nearly impossible these days.
It's nearly impossible.
Unless you literally
it's nearly
live
impossible
on
to
an
do,
island.
But if we, yeah, right. If we, or solitary confinement.
By yourself.
That might be a thing
right.
too. But.
But even then, you got to.
But even then,
cigars.
Yeah, even then. But I will say. Yeah,
not that I know.
Not so much. But I will say that in this space that I'm in right now and in on the precipice of really launching this really big connection point in the vault. I mean, this really big experience.
Like a physical.
Yeah, like this
space.
It's this physical,
connection.
Big
right.
creative hug.
Right.
Where it's like, come into this layer and let's experience everything that the design art community, right, can, right? Let's experience all of it together and
right.
let's try to find your vision. Like, let's vision surf. It's like one big wave pool of creativity, okay? And, you know, we're inviting everybody to put your suit on and get in the water. So on this show, as we sort of move into the end of segment one, I wanted to get your collaborative mind in the right headspace to say, if you're feeling alone, collaboration is the cure. And I want to set the stage for how you collaborate the right way with what I call are the six guiding principles for effective collaboration as defined by the Design Coach. Anyway, stay with us. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. I have been reminded that I must hit at least two of the guiding principles
per
in each segment for the remainder of the show. Ladies and gentlemen.
Otherwise, it has to be like rocket.
No, I can't. I cannot do lightning round with this. It's too meaningful.
No lightning rounds.
It means too much.
Okay.
Anyway, welcome back, everyone. You're listening to the Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1.
Then go
with your host Philip Sassano.
I trust you not.
So listen, as we talk about this concept of collaboration, and as I grab my face, and you're like, "Don't grab your face. Don't hit anything in the studio," as there are many signs posted.
There are signs
to not do so.
Sit on your hands.
Yeah, sit on your hands.
I have
you can tell my energy level is high.
I know you don't even have coffee in front of you. So
I don't because I didn't need it. But I've been
worried.
I woke up earlier in the weekend. At 2 a.m. with this in mind.
Rocket launch, Philip.
Yeah, man. So here's where I'm coming from. If you're, again, we got to work on the premise that this entire life experiment is an interconnected ecosystem.
Of course.
Where every response and activity in my book is in some way performance art. You don't just live lazy. You're just not a good life artist. Okay, like let's be really honest. Like if you're just
gentle parenting.
If you're just moving through it, you're not using all the crayons. If you're just moving through it, your paper's not big enough. If you're just moving through it, you're missing everything.
True.
Okay? True. You're missing everything, okay? Now, listen, if you're fine with that, if you're comfortable there, please turn the station. Okay?
Wait, hold it. Hold it. Just turn it back in the next hour for my show. But
I'm just saying, then this show's not for you.
Right.
But if you're looking at this and you're saying, God, you know, like I believe there's something more. I believe that I can achieve bigger by being more collaborative, and I can achieve bigger things, more interesting things, more meaningful things when you create with other people. I believe that to be elemental. I just believe it to be elemental. Yes, you in the front.
I was waving at somebody.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought you had a question. Thank
no, that
much.
Was not me.
And now back to the show.
sorry.
I will say that you got to believe that that's elemental, right? That
sure.
I've experienced this for as long as I've been alive, that it's always been more satisfaction. I've had greater level of satisfaction when I could do something I could not have done on my own with someone else. And then the bond that creates, mm-hmm. the lasting connection that creates. And I don't care if it's family. I don't care if it's, you know, a business. I don't care if it's a charitable, you know, endeavor, or just, you know, music, or, you know, whatever it is that in this sphere of collaboration that we know as your, you know, typical levels of collaboration.
Now, listen, here's the thing, too.
Yes.
Most people are not as conscious of those connections.
Well, that's the problem.
Right? And so
you just described the problem with the
exactly.
world is that we're all in our own head.
But I will say this.
Yes.
When you have a successful collaboration like you're about to talk about,
sure.
people do remember. They may not know why, but they remember that successful stuff.
They do. A lot of people
do. Core memories.
But a lot of people do. And a lot of people also remember what's created out of it. I mean, like,
exactly.
take any great movie you've seen. Take any, you know, any great book that you've read. Yes, there's an author, but there's probably also an editor. And there's
right.
also, you know what I'm saying? Or there's inspiration that mm-hmm. led to that author's understanding of something, right?
Right?
So even though there are silent collaborators, the collaboration is still there.
Right.
I'm talking about something much more active.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm talking about going on offense with your collaboration in ways that actually can lift and elevate your life.
Right.
And I believe that design can do that, that creativity can do that, that almost anything, any activity in life can do that if you let it in and you approach it from the right perspective. Nobody lives in isolation. Okay, that's the first thing that I want to say. And what I've found and what I am finding is that the minute you accept that your actions and that your perspectives and that your inaction has consequence, because I think a lot of people go through life where they're like, well, I didn't do anything, so that's not my, you know, indifference is their cloak mm-hmm. of like lack of accountability. Indifference is they're like, well, I didn't contribute to the problem, so therefore I'm not the problem. Yeah, but sometimes your inaction.
Exactly.
Is
tasked. It's still a decision.
It's still a decision
right.
to not get
right.
involved. I mean,
right.
you know, we're seeing this play out in some very brutal ways, you know, recently with some of the attacks that we see,
mm-hmm.
right, in the streets lately, where people are more involved in getting it on their iPhone instead of
right.
helping the victim. Like,
right.
it's getting to be to the point where, you know, we're so enthralled with what we can capture and what you can absorb and what you can consume that we forget that this whole thing is a we game.
Yeah.
And not a me game.
Right. Right.
That it's a we game and not a me game. So I think that the first thing that I wanted to say is, beyond the fact that it's an interconnected ecosystem, if you can buy into that, you'll have a much easier time digesting what I'm about to say. Okay. But you have to measure everything against some sort of standard in order for it to be excellent. That's the other piece that I think I'm the most disappointed in from time to time with this, you know, pervasive culture of like everyone wants to have an opinion, but nobody wants that lens turned back to them from an accountability piece.
Right.
And if anything, in the collaborative of environment, you know, opening up your mind to actually being able to absorb another perspective is critical. You know, being able to feel confident enough to challenge your perspective on something is really the gateway to critical thinking. Mm-hmm. And if you can't do that, you're going to have a very, very hard time collaborating. You know, if you always feel like, and listen, I have learned this because, you know, as an artist and as an entrepreneur, you can get very attached to the vision in your mind that you believe you've created. When you really look back, I think of all the contractors and all of the different design talent and all of the different resources and vendors and suppliers that have come into my life. It was never me. It was always we.
Sure.
Even though my name might have been on it, and although I might have gotten the majority of credit for it, it was always a we game.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
In addition to the environment that's created for the other artists who do more of, let's just call it the solo act, right? There are still circumstances that surround them to support them. You know, historically, whether that's been a patron, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
That's funded their activity.
Right.
Whether that's been endowments or schools or whatever it is that has supported that artistic and creative collaboration, I think we need to take it out of that purely traditional creative space and just think of it as problem solving.
Right.
It's almost like we can't be bothered. Like, in other words, if it's not our direct problem, right? If it doesn't touch us directly, why should we get involved? Why should we try to make a difference? We'll just remain indifferent because it's comfortable.
It's easy.
It's easy.
It's lazy.
It's lazy. And then we spend years in that space. I mean, I know a lot of people spend a lot of time.
Yeah.
In the, you know, what is that saying? Like, you know, get busy living, get busy dying from Shawshank Redemption.
Right.
You know, it's like it's a choice, you know? Every man dies, but not every man really lives. Braveheart. Sorry, I'm full of movie quotes today on The Design Coach. Right? But think about that. Every man dies, but not every man really lives, right? And I think the, you know, the spirit with which I want to approach this topic, at least for the first two that I just mentioned, which is the interconnected ecosystem and that your actions and inaction have consequence. And the fact that you have to measure your collaboration against some sort of standard, right? Because it's really easy to be lazy, yes, you in the front.
Okay, but before you go on, though, I have a question.
Yes.
Do you think it's generational?
No.
You think it's across the board?
No, I think equal opportunity intellectually laziness is across the board.
Okay.
you know what I'm saying? I think you've got boomers who are just as indifferent
as
about
X's.
Not wanting
right.
to step up than you do millennials. Right. I don't believe... I just think it's human nature.
But aren't we Gen X?
Yeah.
Okay. We don't have that thought process, though. That is not how our parents...
No, I do have to shout out to Gen X on this. Gen X?
Right.
Gen X, well, it's partially because we had to be very resourceful as children.
Yeah. We got locked out of the house until dark.
Yeah.
We got... I drank out of the garden hose.
Yeah, you had to figure out how to navigate lots of things, and then we were also the ones that onboarded technology.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
We did that.
Right.
We onboarded the technology.
Right.
We were the first guinea pigs of the cell phone bag phone.
Right.
Okay.
So like that's what I'm saying. I think I don't know how it evolved.
I mean, I don't want to do a collaboration scorecard
because I would
lose that game to the greatest generation with World War II.
Oh, there's
Do you see what I'm
exactly.
saying? Like I would
exactly.
like there are so many ways where I would lose that.
If we started
doing scorecards on generational collaboration, right? There's nothing greater than an entire country figuring out a way to mobilize, right, to you know rise up against an evil empire. Like it's really difficult to that's pretty good.
We were lazy to them.
That's pretty good.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
you know,
me creating a nice, really nice retail environment and the vault, right? This
right.
like pales in comparison.
Right.
But
okay, carry on.
For
You're
the purpose
right.
of today's show, I do believe that there is something about the experiences that you've had and whether or not you've stepped enough out of your comfort zone that if you've been able to stand, I'm going to call it the winds of collaboration, In other words, you step out of your comfort zone and it gets a little windy because things are coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got to sort of withstand that, and you're hoping that, you know, you can be a little bit more, rather than be rigid, you're hoping you can be a little bit more like a tree and you can kind of bend with it, right? Like, in other words, you can be somewhat shapeable in understanding why the wind is blowing, and so therefore you don't really worry about it because your roots are deep. That's the standards that I'm referring to. In other words, if you're confident in yourself.
Right. Makes perfect sense.
If you have a good sense of yourself, but that you're not so rigid, right, in having to be right.
You're open-minded.
Yeah, you're open-minded, but open-minded isn't wishy-washy. Because I think that's the knock, right? Someone will say, well, you're not being open-minded. It's like, well, no, I just have standards.
Right.
Like, I just have something that's, I believe, and I'm willing to hear you out about what you want to say, but like, you know, let's talk about my standards as benchmarked against
benchmarks.
Your open-mindedness, and let's talk about what's really worked historically and what's not. It's the same. It really comes to fruition when we talk about the myths. I'm gonna give you a myth. It's like that all artists need pain to do beautiful, to be able to create. Right. No, I think what ends up happening is I think artists sometimes are left no choice because their talent is so devalued that then people with money devalue the art and then they pull from it.
Right. Yeah.
And so therefore the starving artist benefits whom? The patron.
Right.
Right?
Yep.
The one creating the opportunity. The record company. The whoever it is, right?
Right.
Until the artist decides to take control, understand the value, and move forward.
Exactly.
I think when we come back from the break, I want to dig into 2 and 3, which I think are going to surprise everybody. But this concept of collaboration runs deep. And I want to tell everybody, it's not a creative exercise. It should be something that is everyday practice. Because it matters. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. You know, if I don't control this topic, it's just going to spiral me. So I've got to be very careful.
And actually,
to stay on task.
Right. You do because, first of all, I distracted you before, and that was wrong of me.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1 with your host, Philip Sassano. We're talking about collaboration as sort of an everyday exercise, something that you just practice. Because critical thinking matters. I don't know. Because understanding and compassion and right, all of these things matter in a healthy relationships and good dialogue.
Right. I mean, you're only as good as the people that you surround yourself with when you are working on a project or life or whatever. I mean, everybody contributes whether you want them to or not,
mm-hmm.
and whether you realize they're contributing or not.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to, you're collaborating whether you like it or not.
You know, it's interesting that you say that because 3 on this is learn from one another and learn from everything.
Right.
Meaning every situation. I'm gonna describe this for you. I heard, I forgot who it was. Gosh, it was some panel and I caught a snippet on Instagram and it was about what was the best piece of advice someone ever gave you and, you know, what did you learn? And, you know, the person on the panel said, you know, you can learn from the people who are the worst teachers.
Yeah.
You learn what not to do.
Exactly.
So even if you've had a really bad experience, you know, the tendency is to take that and internalize that, right? Sometimes even go victim on it. Right. Like, it's about me. And, mm-hmm. you know, look at how they did me wrong instead of looking at that and saying, OK, how do I not pay that forward?
Right.
In other words, how do I learn from the experience, the crummy experience that somebody gave me? And how do I not perpetuate that in the world? OK, I think I don't know that we walk around as students. I think there's a point in our lives where we all get that stifles and really limits our collaboration where we feel like there's nothing left to learn. You know, we stop being the kid pressing up against the nose against the glass in the museum to try to get a closer look and gain an understanding about something that fascinates us. And I think there's a number of different reasons why that happens. Sometimes it's trauma, but a lot of times it's just comfort.
Mm-hmm. There's a Teddy Swims song about this, by the way.
Is there?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just comfort. You know, like when you're comfortable, you just stop caring.
And right.
Except anything but staying more comfortable.
Right.
And not only is that the enemy of creativity, it's absolutely comes at a price when it comes to collaboration. Because what ends up happening is you're not willing to stretch for the better idea. You're not willing to stretch for a better solution, whether that's creatively or just in life, whether that's, creatively with your kid, or whether or not that's situationally with your child or your neighbor or your spouse or whoever it is, you're not willing to stretch anymore, right? And sometimes you stretch enough and you just realize you have a crummy collaborator and you just don't want to stretch anymore. Mm-hmm. I can see where there's some validity in that.
Of course.
Or you just stop stretching because you just stop trying because it's like, well, it's not working.
They're not going to meet.
They're not going
in the middle.
To collaborate with you. They're just going to take, or they're just going to listen, or whatever it is. But I think more often than not, especially in certain circumstances, especially these days, that comfort becomes the real enemy. The indifference becomes the cancer. Mm-hmm. Right? It really becomes this like pervasive, if I make a move, what if? Right? What if I say this thing and they don't like me? What if I make this move and it's perceived wrong? Right? What if? Instead of saying, this is who I am, this is the set of standards I want to live by, and I am open-minded, but I do have standards and I want to keep moving and I want to keep learning. But that momentum morally, okay, gives you the stability and the balance. And I know that gets a little bit, that gets really heady, okay, especially for a Sunday morning, but I'm just letting you know. Like, right about now is where we get into this, like, if collaboration isn't something that you're actively practicing, it is so easy to get into just a comfort mindset. And have that, you can live in that space for so many years that then when someone is asking you to then collaborate on something big, you can't flip the switch.
Right.
See, I really believe that so many things in our lives are a function of habit, like just really good habit.
Complacency.
Complacency is a habit. It's a habit.
Yes.
Doing nothing is action.
Yeah. You've made the decision not to do anything.
Sitting there
right.
is nothing. Being silent is an action.
Right.
Okay, but we don't rationalize it that way.
Nope.
See, that's where we end up.
Didn't do anything. Well, exactly.
Right. Where we end up is we end up with saying, that's really not my place, or I don't really want to get involved, or it could have some detrimental effect on my comfort.
Right. I'm going to stay in my lane.
Yeah, I'm going to stay in my lane.
But
and then it's also then it's even worse. And I suggest you do the same.
That, oh, yes.
We hear that a lot.
Yes. So right. Everybody just drive down the one-way
step
street.
Step in line.
We'll definitely right? get
the whole,
places
the
if
whole,
we
the
do
whole,
that.
You better get in line.
Uh-huh.
Right? And I feel like that's not just in our, it comes at an artistic, I don't know. It actually degrades the problem-solving ability of either a person or a group when we think that way. But I think that the second part of this is, you've got to think about the communication. And when we talk about the packaging of our words, remember we talked about tact? We continually on the show talk about how to phrase something to get buy-in.
Right.
Or to sort of pitch your idea.
Right.
You know, we're so lazy with our words now, too, that the ability for us to frame something, and we talked about how important this is when you're trying to sell an abstract idea to anyone, is to frame the conversation as to why what you're about to say might actually solve a problem or be something worth embarking on. What are you looking at me like that for?
We don't even use entire words anymore.
No kidding.
IDK, you know?
No, I know.
I mean, all of these, we don't even use the whole word, let alone frame the idea properly with words. Use your words.
Yeah, our thumbs have become more valuable than our mouth.
Right.
Think about that for a minute. Our thumbs have become more valuable than our ability to articulate an idea.
Mm-hmm. You know, like in your case.
I mean, you're so limited by, first of all, you're limited by the alphabet. Right. No, I'm not kidding. You're limited by the alphabet. You're limited by so many things when you just use your thumbs. Yeah. And there's an entire world of wonderful descriptors. Right? And what's funny is when you now use them, it's almost like when your kids call and they get annoyed that you bothered to call them.
Oh, my God.
Like, why are you calling me? You could just text me.
Right.
If you don't think that that's eroding our ability to collaborate, you're naive. You're totally naive.
Right. And you have to have imagination. So for instance, if you work for Philip and you get a text that says WTF, he's actually saying, "Where's the furniture?"
And don't you dare K me. Don't you dare K me.
If you send him thumbs up,
K me.
I mean, you get angry emojis. You get like there are certain
I get a little shrapnel coming my way.
Mm-hmm.
From using too much punctuation. But punctuation is the only way I can get across that I'm not upset about something. That I'm excited about something, right? So it's like, I love when other people use punctuation. It's my way of telegraphing, at least in the best way that I can via text, some sort of emotion.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
You can't collaborate via text.
Nope.
You can coordinate via text.
Sure.
I'm going to be here. You're going to be there. What time are you going to be home? You can do logistics via text.
For sure.
It is not collaboration.
No.
Actual idea exchange has to come from this combination of emotion and intellect and empathy, feeling, facial. Like, it's so human. Like, if you think about the, like, collaboration is so, it's like, other than reason, which, right, AI is something that, you know, we're not going to get into that. That's a whole nother
deal
when it comes to reasoning, right, and computation. But as it relates to real collaboration, the magic between the exchange of ideas and emotion and the search together for the better idea is something that makes us so inherently beautifully human.
You are never going to get the level of human interaction and collaboration anywhere else. Nowhere else. Not on the phone, not on a Zoom call, not texting, not emailing, nothing that you need in order to be the best creative self that you need to be, especially in your line of work, unless you are face-to-face.
See,
the body language, the facial expressions, when you make a suggestion and somebody texts you back, "Oh, sure, that looks great!" Exclamation point. That is, no, they don't. They don't think that looks great. If you were sitting in front of them, the facial expression, the tone of their voice
would tell them.
Oh, yeah, that looks great.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Okay, mm-hmm. So you will never, never completely collaborate, compromise.
No, you'll never be able to understand the full breadth of it.
Right.
If you don't talk about the hard things.
Right. And
big things are hard. I mean, I just did a show for Designing for Couples. Hey guys, big things are hard. You're going to fight.
Yep.
There's going to be tension. Okay. At varying degrees. Big things are hard, and that's why most people don't do them.
Right.
And that's also why they stop. That's also why they give up.
Give up. Yep.
Because they can't handle the heat of the collaboration. See, and I also think that because it's so human, and because it's such a deeply rooted, I don't know, the fruits of it are so deeply embedded in our heart and our head, okay?
Mm-hmm.
That the byproduct of this connection is so real. That if we don't practice it on a regular basis, when you do need it in a critical moment of problem solving and crisis, you won't be able to do it. You will fold.
Yep. Perfect example.
When it gets hard.
Absolutely.
You won't be able to solve the problem because you haven't had to do it.
Right. Practice.
And it, you know, you can call it whatever you want. It's like there's people going out there like, cheering right now going, yeah, everybody's soft. It's not, you can be kind and you can be collaborative. You can be soft and be collaborative.
And still set boundaries.
And you can still set
have
boundaries.
Expectations.
It's not about being,
right.
It's not about tough love all the time.
Right.
What it's about is really listening and understanding and then trying to find the common ground. We have fundamentally lost most of that.
Right.
We are only interested in winning. We are only interested in winning and being right and dominating the landscape so that our perspective is louder, more dominant, and more powerful. That is such a sad statement as it relates to the collaborative grade that I would give our society today.
I was going to say the world at this point. Right, right.
Right?
Right.
That it makes more sense to kill than to talk.
Mm-hmm.
It's just
right.
Right? Like it's it's crazy, and it's getting granular, which is kind of scary. Because, you know, it was funny because I did, not to bring up AI, but I did think about this one thing that AI, that this guy was talking about on the quantum computing announcement that Microsoft just made, which is just going to change the face of everything in the next probably 20 years. But it came down to the fact that all AI is going to do in the wrong hands is going to make bad guys smarter, mm-hmm. and they have no boundaries. They are completely desensitized. Listen, the only thing from stopping you from driving your car into oncoming traffic is an imaginary yellow line.
Right.
That can't stop your car.
Right.
So the only thing stopping you is you.
Right.
So, right? So we have to
learn. No imaginary line.
We're going to have to really understand that the sense of urgency in good collaboration and cooperation and communication, it has to start to the pendulum has to start to swing. Or else you're going to be at the mercy of so many other forces that because you haven't been able to collaborate and problem solve, you won't be able to deal with. Okay? When we come back from the break, we're going to talk about 5 and 6, which are the guiding principles for collaboration and just how important it is, maybe now more than ever. Stay with us. You're listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Is this segment 4?
It is.
Oh, much to the host's chagrin, it is segment 4.
Hagrid.
I apologize in advance for the brevity of my statements on this segment. Anyway, welcome, everybody. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.
Did I keep you on track, though? That's the question. Did I keep you on track? Are we at 5 and 6?
Yeah, you kept me on track. We did a good job with this. I think we're tracking quite well, quite nicely. If I had to give myself a grade, I won't do that. I'll leave that up to the audience. I will...
Okay.
Collaborate.
So what's 5?
Well, collaboration comes down to these last two are pretty important.
Okay.
And I think they're sort of the crux of it. One is, you know, and I've been known to do this on the radio. I have been known from time to time to literally verbally fire hose my audience.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Or with information that makes it almost impossible to keep up with what I'm saying, and all the vision, okay? I've been known to do this to my lovely spouse, to my kids, to my family, to my team, to my clients. It is just the vision comes with such fluidity sometimes.
Sometimes you just have to get it out to get it organized.
Yeah, that's not great all the time. No. Like, I'm just saying, like, I've had to learn to harness that because it's not always great, right? And I think recently we've put into practice because now I don't just rely on me to collaborate. Now I have to collaborate with my team. My team has to collaborate amongst one another. My team also has to then collaborate with clients and with vendors and all.
Everybody.
Like, in other
right.
words, it's now beyond me. It is now, you know, it's grown, right, beyond the design coach as a person.
Right.
And it's grown into the concept that we are loving. Which is coaching people to great creative outcomes in so many ways we couldn't even possibly imagine.
Of course.
Right. And in so many granular ways that it absolutely does affect their daily life beyond the trim I chose for the window treatment.
Right.
Or the sofa, or the sink, or the tile, or the whatever it is that designers traditionally pick.
Right.
We're picking a lot more than just that.
Well, you're picking experiences and how to have them.
But we're also teaching.
Right.
Right. And so one of
what do you know? You're coaching.
You are. What do you know? Oh, no. What do you know?
How did that happen?
What are the chances? What are the chances?
It's like you thought that's what
it's
you
like
were
you thought
be
that was
doing.
Your name, and then you're doing it. Look at you, pal.
Look at you go.
Anyway. We've done something that I think is really effective, and I want to encourage everyone to practice this. Especially if you have a big idea or a big initiative and a big vision that you're trying to collaborate on.
Yeah.
And that is this concept of what we call micro issuance. Okay. Micro issuance started in our design build unit, where we were giving clients so much information to try to give them the complete vision that it was doing them a disservice because they couldn't navigate the totality of the information.
Right. Overwhelming.
We were so good at putting it together so quickly. that a lot of people were like, oh, great. Like, I could see it all. It was beyond seeing it. It was the sizes of things, the dimensions of things, the placement of things, the integration of things. It was just almost too much information.
Sure.
Especially if you've got, let's just say, a 10 to 12 to 15,000 square foot house, an 8-acre property with multiple buildings on it. It became an overwhelming task. And so I said to the team, I said, you know what really worked well when we were dissecting large projects for clients going through it for the first time? And in many cases, Nancy, it is a lot of our clients' first time doing something this big.
Sure.
This micro issuance. Now, I didn't call it that at the time. I call it that now. But what it involves getting to a certain stage in a design where you know that it's digestible creatively, collaboratively, and you issue just that.
Mm-hmm.
And you do it with the right sequencing. In other words, you don't talk about aesthetics. You know what I mean? You don't talk about the color of the sofa. You talk about how it fits in a room first. So you make sure that the sequencing is correct. And we started doing this, and it's made all the difference in the world when trying to collaborate with multiple partners. You do it in smaller increments. What do we tend to do when we collaborate? We tend to try to make our case and get it all out.
Right.
And then we're asking for feedback on the totality of what looks like maybe like 30 things. And then you're upset when the collaborator that you're asking to participate in this activity is confused.
Isn't
seeing
your,
it. Well,
because they're not
it's in your head.
Right.
Exactly. It's in my head, right? Or it's in our collective heads.
And I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to crawl in there.
Not really.
No.
No. I mean, I'm not saying that it doesn't have some beautiful spaces, but it's also got some dark places. So I'm just saying. It moves quickly. So what I'm advocating is, if you're trying to do this, do it in smaller doses and do it in the right sequencing, right?
Right.
You know, maybe that rather than tell someone you want to go on a destination, maybe find out whether or not they want to go on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, let's
here's a thought.
Let's use our
pick a restaurant, then ask them if they're hungry.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Instead of saying, let's go here, be like, would you like to stay in here? Yeah, but we don't do what we do is we're in such a rush to make our point, to get our way.
Get to the outcome.
No, but to also sometimes get our way,
mm-hmm.
that we disguise information and coaching and teaching. We disguise it as collaboration when it's really, let me make my case.
Right. It's really gaslighting.
Yeah, yeah. Right. No, it really kind of is.
You love this.
It's really kind
me.
Of like, don't you love that? I love this for you, don't you? Just keep nodding like a bobblehead doll.
I love that for you.
Right? Like, but we do that. Mm-hmm. And we do it. And then you almost like verbally beat people down to the point where they don't have any other choice but to agree, and we all seem to be fine with that. It's almost like a debate-style beatdown where you lay out so many facts, you make it impossible for your opponent, you know, to respond. And in this instance, how sad. Your collaborator should never be seen as someone you need to win over. The collaboration, you should come with an understanding that if you're doing it right, you're coming with equally valid points of view and perspectives that you can somehow find a way to meld.
And can I just ask how many times you've been sitting down and you've collaborated and everybody's listening and everybody's paying attention to one another and you are truly collaborating, and one single thought or idea just makes it explode into something better than you ever thought it could be.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because everybody was in tune and listening, and you were giving the right amount of information at the right time, and somebody had a thought, somebody had an idea, and it was like,
but the most important,
mind-blowing.
The most important part of what you just said isn't the activity of the words.
No.
It's the room for space and feedback.
Right.
We don't do that
because
we don't really want to hear the answer.
Seems like work to me.
We don't want the no. We're afraid of the no. Okay. Now let me unpack this portion in particular. So much of collaboration we take personally. If somebody, and I remember this, I remember bruising every time I mentioned an idea and Julie didn't love it. And then after a while, she just kept saying yes. And then I realized, like, why aren't you saying no? Like, like just loving everything I say. She's like, because it doesn't matter. You were not being a good collaborator.
Right. Now,
she didn't phrase it that way. She phrased it a lot differently than that. But I'm just going to let you know, like, my wife has taught me so much, and my family has taught me so much, and my position as a business owner, working with clients creatively to do big things, has taught me so much. And if nothing else, it's taught me that it's the space in between and not being afraid of the no and understanding that that's just their impression in the clay that's moving, or it's their contribution to it, and they just want to feel in that space that you provide heard. It doesn't mean you can't win them over, or it doesn't mean that you can't have a better idea. Because I heard a bunch of playwrights that were sitting around. I couldn't remember who it was. I think it was maybe Ben Affleck and Matt Damon. They were sitting, and I saw a clip, and it said, I think you have to understand that when you go into the writer's room, or even, I think this is probably true for songs as well.
Sure.
And books as well, or any kind of activity, any kind of problem-solving activity, business, finance, whatever. All good ideas started as the wrong idea.
Of course.
Nobody sat down and said, I've got it, right? It's more like, hey, we're trying to solve this problem. Let's go. And it's through the failure, the conversation, and the shared understanding of the goal. I mean, it's very Apollo 13, right? It's very, right? It's very like, you got five things. Please make an oxygen mask out of it. You know what I mean? And it's like duct tape and
chewing gum.
Life is a lot like that. You know, life is a lot like
MacGyver.
Doing something amazing with not a lot.
Right.
Or not enough. Or not something at the right time.
What you think you can do, you actually can do.
Even though you think you might need more, you probably sometimes need less.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have the space to, if you're not creating the space, you're not creating what I call the collaborative environment for not just do many hands make light work, but sometimes the right minds in the room and the right spirit are able to connect in ways that you can't any other way.
Right.
It's beautiful. Right. It's really beautiful, but you got to have the right mindset. And if you do it in smaller doses, it makes it easier.
And you have to take the earplugs out.
But I'm telling you, don't try to do it all at once. Mm-hmm. Let's try to just climb base camp to base camp before we get to the mountain.
Right.
Okay, the last one I'm going to leave everybody with is really, it's going to sound really simple, but I believe it's so incredibly important. So many people approach collaboration as an activity. Something that you do at a retreat. We're going to collaborate to solve this problem within our business. We're going to go and we're going to work out this problem and we're going to solve this thing. And they see it as something that they do together as an activity. Although that may be true on the surface, it's actually collaboration is a relationship because it involves trust.
Mm.
Or the lack thereof. An activity you can do without trust.
Absolutely.
An activity you can do, and you can just do. You know, as long as you can run, if you trust, your legs are going to work.
Right.
Okay?
Except for that whole trust fall thing.
I'm just saying.
You probably have some trust.
I'm just saying that it's a relationship. So you have to treat collaboration like you would treat a relationship.
You have to trust other people's experience, other people's knowledge.
If you bring an attitude to the relationship... Well, that's not going to work.
Nobody's going
to
trust
that. If you bring your baggage to the relationship or the collaboration, that's not going to work.
Right.
If you're going to look at your collaborator through the lens of your previous collaborators, that's not going to work. It's like looking at your boss through the lens of the bosses you've had. You're like, well, that's my truth. That's my experience. That does not leave room as a collaborator. That means you'd rather bring your cloak of scars and your emotional weaponry to the collaboration. Put your emotional weaponry down, okay? Come to the offering, right, as vulnerable as maybe the other person is, and you're going to be amazed at what transpires when you focus on it being a relationship and not an activity. All I'm saying, Nancy, is if you think of it in those terms, you should honor it. You should respect it. You should practice it with intention. And it will come back tenfold to your benefit. Okay? Have a great Sunday, everybody. You've been listening to The Design Coach right here on Lake 96.1. Collaborate. You've been coached.